Hello and welcome to Rapid Access Radio, presented by ProTech Central, Episode 6, April 2025. Hi, I'm Sean Mullen, your host. Today's guest is Bill Politz of Politz Strategies. This episode runs just about 25 minutes. Friends, we're visiting today with a longtime industry friend, Bill Politz. And Bill and I have gotten to know each other over the years from our mutual work in the industry and also in some trade associations. And I just thought it would be a lot of fun to welcome a good friend, a fellow musician, and an industry powerhouse when it comes to understanding clean agents and regulatory environment. And Bill is just a real pro when it comes to that. So Bill, welcome to the microphones of Rapid Access Radio.
Thank you very much, Sean. It's a distinct pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Bill, I know your professional background, but might you share with our listeners a little bit about your journey into the field of fire protection?
Sure. Well, as I start my presentations with sometimes on fire and atmospheric regulatory issues, I say, I'm a card-carrying tree hugger from Portland, Oregon. and I did run the recycling center and during my senior year of high school, which included me, the basic was you took out the wine bottles from one trash can and you broke them into the green and the clear and the red. Anyway, so that was a lot of fun. But being a mixed business and music education professional, I found myself kind of teaching myself into an early grave, in the 2000s, and made a switch into leaning on my prior business experience. Got a job at HVR Clean Agents and worked there for 13 years and did a lot of important work there, got the training wheels off and started moving forward. And I've been in the clean agent reclamation, recycling, and redeployment field since 07, and worked my way up to vice president at HVR Clean Agents and then director of sales and strategy at AGAS. Basically, trying to figure out how to help the environment by helping people understand regulations and their important protective to the environment effects, and helping people in my organizations find out ways to do that in a profitable way. And if you know what you're doing, there is money to be made. That's what I'm doing now. Now I have an LLC called Politz Strategies I launched last month to help broaden that message and help more diverse audience than just the one companies that I have worked for.
Well, congratulations on the startup, and I'm glad to know that you're still plying your trade to help people do what's right for the environment and to try and do it in a profitable way. So that's a good calling. I'm just kind of curious. You and I have known each other for many, many years, and we have seen such tremendous changes in the impact of fire, these types of fire agents. But as they've come under the scrutiny from a regulatory environment because of the impact on the environmental considerations, I'm just kind of curious, as you look at those, what are some of the particulars that you have seen in impacting positively impacting positively the goals of environmental conservation, but also maybe some of the ways that you might see improvements in those areas too?
Well, sure, Sean. I think you can go back to the Montreal Protocol, which was sort of enacted in 1987 and went into force in 89. And the United States was in compliance with that from the early 90s on. And this is an international agreement to protect the ozone layer from ozone depleting chemicals. And that is a huge success. There's almost every country in the world is a member, a party to that treaty. And it's had a great healing effect on the ozone layer, which is expected to return to 1980 levels of protective ozone in the stratosphere by mid-century. And, this is a really hard thing to do, you know. Unfortunately, the path we've taken created other problems, which we can go into a little bit. But in terms of successes, that's huge. It's really great to see human beings can take their effect on the environment and improve the outcome. So that's one thing that's really great. In terms of changes that you'd want to highlight in the current period, it's been since the middle of last decade that people like myself have had our ears pricked up to the question of, let's just, for lack of a better term at the moment, PFAS, P-F-A-S.
Yes.
Especially in AFFF and the firefighting foams developed in the 1960s just did an amazing job, particularly with liquid fuel fires. Unfortunately, the materials, the PFOS and PFOA, PFOS and PFOA, in those AFFF formulations do a great job of creating a barrier between the fuel and the atmosphere, but they also have just extremely negative, deleterious human environmental effects
on health. Right.
And so I'm really glad that all of us should be glad for the attention that general field of concern has been raised and people are taking action on it. We kind of do have to make sure that in terms of clean agents in particular, people don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
exactly. Or,
yeah. So it isn't a one size fits all question. Certainly the AFFF, there's no question about that. The DOD since 2016 has been phasing that out. So that's been in process for a long time. The other chemicals for clean agents have more distinguished, are distinguishable by other factors that kind of put them into a completely different class, which there's scientific ambiguity in general, looking from, 30,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And there's also scientific indications that, they are absolutely benign. I don't call them good, but benign, I think, is a proper term. So those are some of the things in the regulatory. One last thing I might mention is the AIM Act, which is the United States, legislative reaction to the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol. And I can go into more of that later, some more details, but that's helps limit atmospheric warming, and HFCs are very important in fire suppression, although HFCs used worldwide and on all the other refrigeration is a huge user.
Exactly.
Fire is only like between 2-5% of the use of HFCs. Nonetheless, we have to kind of follow the lead there, but there's been, some really good work there because, if you do the Kigali Amendment direction on limiting atmospheric warming, they talk about the 1.5 degree, trying to keep it to 1.5 degree rise. Yep. Almost 25% of that 1.5 degrees could be controlled with the HFCs like the Kigali Amendment is proposing. So in the developed world, Kigali Amendment is in full force. In the developing world, the end of this decade, it'll be transitioning worldwide, and we should start seeing those, the reduction of atmospheric warming due to HFCs really start to kick in next decade and beyond. So it's really a great win for the environment, and transitions have to be made, and there's things you can do about that.
You know, I'm so glad you touched on the success of the initial run of limiting the CFCs for the ozone. And I lived through that, as did you. And it's good to know that, to your point, you know, we humans can come together. We can affect positively our environment. And so I hope that that bodes well for the efforts that this AIM Act is doing, at least from the United States point of view. But I really appreciate the fact that you're distinguishing the developed world versus the developing world. And again, how they all kind of come together. I'd like to ask you about the reclamation process, because those of us in the clean agent fire suppression world, especially those of us who are members of the Fire Suppression Systems Association, we have signed on to a voluntary code of practice. And that voluntary code of practice said, hey, we are going to handle these agents responsibly, and we're not going to do so in such a way that may cause an accidental release of those. And one of the ways that at least our company has done that is we've worked with EPA-approved recyclers. I'm curious, from your perspective in that world, have you seen others, and especially maybe in the refrigerant world, have you seen them be as proactive in the proper disposal and reclamation as those of us in the fire protection world have been?
No, absolutely not. The refrigeration industry has a long way to go. In fire, it's a high 90% of the material coming out of the service is reclaimed. And
right.
There might be, I think one of the reasons for that is we are a small integrated community of professionals who are focused from birth on protecting people, environment. That's, you know, the fireman, and fire dog, and everybody out there is true blue. Not everybody, but, you know, by and large. And refrigeration is kind of a little bit the opposite. It's broad brush, it's mass market, it's high volume. There's a real diversity of actors, and the margins are lower. And it takes time, a little more time at least, to reclaim properly. Some people are better than others. I think, one of my former companies developed a really high-speed recovery pump to lower the time and increase the value of the process to the owner of the material. And this is a real push, this particularly around these high global warming potential gases like HFCs that are widely used in refrigeration, particularly in the developing world. Refrigeration is new and expanding. A lot of improvement needs to go, got a long way to go there. And I think people are starting to get the idea and on the right track with that.
I think that, and you and I have worked closely through FSSA in helping to represent our interests in the industry to these larger regulatory organizations. And I'm just kind of curious how you have seen the balance of those organizations, EPA and some of the other ones, that balance the advocacy for doing the right thing to the environment, but not necessarily torpedoing the industry that is seeking to be environmentally responsible.
Well, you know, if you talk about the EPA, their objective is, you know, they're probably in their charter. They have to be kind of blind to the business considerations. For instance, in developing some of the small details of the AIM Act, you know, fire industry through the Halon Alternatives Research Corporation, a.k.a. HARC, had a lot of meetings with the EPA to try to tell them about our point of view, and you're going to really kind of upend some elements of this industry with some of this stuff was kind of our argument. And they said, it's, well, as I recall, what I heard was, well, I'm sorry, but we can't really pay attention to that. You know, there's going to be pain, there's going to be changes, but it's going to benefit not just the United States, but the whole world if we do this. So we do kind of have to sort of, you know, push through you know, do, and you're going to have to adapt. And that was not terribly comforting or happy to hear, but on one level, but I think, you know, if you were on the other side of the coin, if you were just, you know, they have a charge to, you know, protect everybody, not just the jobs here or there. And frankly, you know, it's something that does benefit everybody. So altruistically, we should just jump in and say, yeah, let's do it. You know, that's really, in terms of the regulatory agencies, they are, you know, there are other regulatory bodies worldwide, you know, and I have had some interaction with state people, the state departments of environmental quality and stuff like that. You know, people are actually interested to hear what impact the regulation is going to have, but they still have to kind of keep the public interest at heart. You know, did you mention, well, you mentioned the FSSA for sure.
Sure.
But, you know, I think the trade groups or the trade association, like Fire Suppression Systems Association, HARC, and, you know, to a certain extent, NAFED and NFPA are very much involved in trying to get regulations that A, do the right thing, but in a way that allows for, I guess, transparency and compliance. In other words, you can make really, it's not like the EPA has got people on every street corner sniffing out people who are doing wrong things. They have to make regulations so that they are able to be complied with. And I think the associations we talked about and their interface with the EPA, that is the type of thing that we like to, we try to get a reality-based view into the regulators' minds so that they understand what is achievable and what will be ultimately effective. Because you can have a rule that's really going to clean everything up, but you could, but impossible to comply with. And that obviously wouldn't get anybody anywhere.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
they're on the watch for that, and we're there in those associations to make sure they know what they're dealing with.
And I think that just my own personal view is that to your point, these organizations, NAFED, NFPA, FSSA, and the like, I think by and large they want to do the right thing, and their approach has been as again, this is my personal view, has been as collegial as any, and have really tried to minimize the confrontational aspects that, you know, could easily come forward in those types of conversations. And I think that at least my experience in helping with some of those things when I was past president of FSSA, you know, the EPA was genuinely interested in our input and our observations. And I think because we did it professionally and because we did it ethically and we didn't do it with what I will call the accusatory voice or, you know, the victim's voice. I think they respected that and, you know, and they took a lot of what we had to say. So I agree with all that. So friends, we are having a wonderful chat with a good friend and industry expert, Bill Politz. And Bill cited, as we kind of come to the close of our time together, I'm just kind of curious. You operate at a higher level than I do. I'm ProTech Central World. We're here in the Midwest, but you have your experience and your awareness in the industry is a lot broader, and that's why I like visiting with you and getting, you know, asking you to be a part of Rapid Access Radio. But I'm just kind of curious, as you look out, what do you see as maybe some of the biggest challenges facing the fire protection industry, maybe, let's say, next 5 to 10 years? What do you think we're really going to have to deal with big time?
Well, there are a couple levels to that. There are some niche markets that are going to need to kind of retool or get more granular in terms of complying with regulations. But I think in doing so, they'll find a profit and margin advantage in doing so. And in particular, one thing I'm going to say is, you know, the use of reclaimed materials, I believe, is, you know, it's a circular economy model. You know, you can point to the Native Americans and not wasting anything. And, you know, Aboriginal peoples everywhere. But it still holds true for a modern industrial society that reusing what you can is the best way to, in the case of HFCs, for instance, under the AIM Act, lower the end user's carbon footprint. Because if you use a reclaimed product, you don't have to mine the ore, process the equipment, ship it over here from China. We've got all this gas in the United States. For God's sakes, let's use it, because that's the best way to reduce emissions, unless you're going to pay somebody to burn it.
Yeah.
And at this point, we're not doing that yet. Someday we will, for sure. It's kind of beginning to happen for Halon, I heard. So that is something that hardly anybody understands, that reusing a reclaimed product lowers emissions. People hear it's a high global warmer. Oh, we can't use it. Actually, if you use it, you're helping solve the problem, because that keeps value in the product, in the supply chain, and incentivizes owners to make sure to keep it in the tank and don't let it leak out.
That's right.
So that's one thing to mention. People were comfortable with Novec 1230 until they said we're not going to make it anymore because of the PFAS concerns. But don't get your shorts in a knot because of that stuff. I don't get wrapped around the axle, as a former employer to say. Because that. The concerns for clean agents under PFAS are relatively minute, if you want to compare them to AFFF.
Sure.
And there are ways we are working to deal with that, because frankly, just about all the clean agents, except the Halotron 1 and Halons, are PFAS.
But
it's such a huge, broad definition. PFAS, it doesn't rise to the level of that it does for AFFF. But, you know, I think one of the interesting things to note is that, as opposed to the EU REACH ECHA regulations that are under consideration now, the EPA's the EPA's approach is to ensure science-based decision-making. In Europe, they're doing it like, well, we don't think that by the time the science is settled, it'll be too late to solve the problem. And that's kind of like, it seems like to me, it's a shirking of responsibility that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, and thank God the EPA is doing that. So I think we're going to be fine there. If you want to talk about the future, look, this whole interconnected thing and alarm and detection, that devices are connected to the panel, that's amazing. And that's going to increase safety and help people do it less expensively and help people have the money to expand protection into other areas that they wouldn't normally do. Yeah. And I guess finally, I think it's hard to ignore that the growth of a private equity ownership in fire suppression and fire protection in general is growing. And one of the problems there is that fire hazards are all unique, and they don't typically respond as well to a top-down ownership. you kind of have to have real trust and empower the people on the ground. And I think that's something PE could do to learn a little bit more about to help fire protection stay safe under that type of ownership dynamic.
Interesting. Interesting. Friends, we've been visiting with Bill Politz, an industry expert in the areas of clean agents and the impact on the environment, as well as a regulatory expert in those areas. So, Bill, we really appreciated the time that you've taken to visit with us today to share your observations and your expertise with our listeners. And it's just been a lot of fun visiting with you. So thanks again for joining us today on Rapid Access Radio.
Oh, Sean, you're quite welcome. I have to say the pleasure is all mine. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. Plan to join us again when our guest will be Steve Nudelberg of On the Ball Performance for a lively and informative conversation on the value of personal engagement for the benefit of all.